Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bit Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Welcome to Social Distance Central, the show with the COVID name. It's not about COVID. During the COVID era, I'm Bic Nizar. With me, the voice of your Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. What's going on, man?
Well, I was getting all excited because I thought Man United was playing today, and then we were just talking off the air, and you pointed out, rightfully so, that the game is actually tomorrow. So I was all fired up and excited, and I got to wait 24 hours.
Okay, man. It's okay.
The good news about that, though, from our perspective as supporters of said club, is that we are actually going to be on the air later in the afternoon tomorrow, which means we are free to watch the entire game. So that's a big bonus.
So programming alert. Usually we do Game It Takes. The winner will join us on Friday at noon. So tomorrow you and I are hosting the program. So two things, more time to vote. And also that means tomorrow we will have the Game It Takes winner on the program between 4:30 and 7. So we'll hear from the take artists later today. It's going to be Bailey Broadman and Jordan from Saskatoon who chimed in on the text line and getting in. So we'll hear from the winner tomorrow. We'll hear their takes later today. But yeah, there will be no Social Distance Central tomorrow, but we will both be back at 4 o'clock tomorrow.
Yes, and it was incredibly important that we were still able to crown a Game of Takes winner, so we will
have to
do that during the program. So later in the afternoon, but make sure to join us tomorrow to see whether Bailey can defend his crown yet again or whether Jordan could come in and take it from him, sit on the composite throne with their takes on Brock Besser, which we'll get to later in the show.
That's later on, after 12:35. We will talk to Justin Bourne in just a couple of minutes. He's written extensively about Quinn Hughes and just how impressed he has been. And Batch, we're getting ready for these lists that come up from NHL.com, a new one today for centers in the league.
These lists are exhausting, aren't they?
That's
because as much as, yes, the Canucks have been disrespected a lot on these lists, and rightfully so, I feel like a lot of these lists are no-win situations for whoever's drawing them up because somebody is always going to feel like they've been snubbed.
And last week, Sat, Walker, and I on the program tried to do like our top 10 players in the NHL. And when you sit down and do the exercise, like it's really difficult. It is so tough to be like, okay, this guy is definitely better than this guy, and you've got to narrow it down to 10. So tough. I had less of an issue with this one than the Markstrom one, but it was still kind of weird to see, like, Jonathan Toews. I guess he's had some strong previous playoff performances, but are we saying right now Toews is better than Pettersson? I'm not saying that. Mark Scheifele, really strong. Is he as dominant defensively as Elias Pettersson? Nick Backstrom, like, I'm a big fan of Nick Backstrom's game, but like he's on the older side of things. I can go either way on this. It was just surprising to see his name left off.
Yeah, I don't have much, like you were saying, I don't have as much of a problem with this list as I did with the Markstrom one. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of very good centermen on that list. And, you know, even if you look at Jonathan Toews, he's coming off an 81-point season last year, which is something that Elias Pettersson has not done. Now, Pettersson was on pace to have more points than Toews this season. But, you know, as much as Elias Pettersson is a superstar, or at the very least a superstar in the making, Toews might be the only guy on that list that I would put him above, to be perfectly honest. And that's something that Pettersson is going to, you know, he'll make his way up that list as the years go forward. And as the Canucks have increased opportunity to play in the playoffs and increased opportunity to have success in that regard, and he gets tested in some of those high pressure games. But, you know, if we're looking at heading into the playoffs, if we're looking at teams that are expected to win, if we're looking at guys that are expected to have big impacts on their teams, most of the guys on that list are either already battle tested or are on teams that are in a much better position to win than Elias Pettersson is with the Canucks.
Does show you how deep the center class is, though, because just going through this list, like Evgeny Kuznetsov, Mika Zibanejad, Zibanejad just barely made the list. Kuznetsov, I don't think, was also on it either. And we know he basically probably should have won Conn Smythe. And he's so good. But just going through all the names, it's like, man, the center depth in the league right now, unbelievable. We talk about this new emerging set of D-men, Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar. Centers is like 25 deep of really high-end talent.
Yeah, certainly is. And it's not something that I had really actively thought of until I saw the list. And then I went, oh, yeah, he's really good. And he's really good. And he's really good. And then suddenly, like, you've picked a centerman on more than half the teams in the league, essentially. You know, there is some great young talent at multiple positions in the National Hockey League, and Elias Pettersson not being on that list, whether you agree with it or not, does show that there are a ton of high-end centermen around the league right now.
It's Social Distance Central. Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor joined now with Sportsnet hockey analyst, and also you hear him on Hockey Central at Fan 590. It is Justin Bourne. Did you manage to check out this Super 16 list of centers today, Justin?
You know what? I caught a glimpse of it. You know, the number one thing that caught my eye was Andrew Walker tweeting it with the phrase, "Here we go again," which I knew immediately meant that Pettersson didn't get the love he deserved, so... that's pretty much, I know that's the note in Vancouver, right?
Yeah, for sure. And like, okay, we had you on when we did the top 10 lists. And these things, are, as Batch was just saying, like, these are no-win propositions to figure these things out. Because, like, I'm just looking at the list of people, because they showed the entire who voted for who kind of thing. And you see, like, Scheifele, you see Barkov, you see Couturier. I'm like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And then you see Noah Pettersson. Like, oh, man, how do you fit this into 16 guys? This is impossible.
Yeah. No, I know. It really is a tough job when you're going through and trying to make picks for any of those sort of things. It's been eye-opening for me voting on, you know, the Hart Trophy and voting on Selke and awards like that because, you know, and I think this is a point that Walker had made before too, where he said that you look at a guy, and obviously Pettersson would be one of those guys where you say, hey, he's top 10 guy in the league for sure. Top 10 for sure. And you just say top 10, and then you start going through the list. You're like, boy, it's a pretty crowded field, and that goes for centers around the league, and it adds up fast. So it's pretty subjective, and I think when you get to the level of who were the guys in the tier, maybe just below the best in the world, just below the McDavid and Crosby, it's a pretty packed field, and it kind of comes down to your preference, what you like in a player at that point.
Yeah, and as we were just talking about, Pettersson is also a guy who may not be as battle-tested when it comes to playoff-like games as many of the guys on that list, but at least from a Canuck fan perspective, you have to hope that he'll have a chance over the next few years to work his way up that list by playing in some meaningful games, starting with the play-in series against the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, and so much of these things are just public exposure, right? Like generally having been seen by the people who vote on these types of things enough times. And you know, that's when it comes to getting public recognition for your abilities, you know, that's coaches tell you in junior hockey, college hockey, and all the way up that if you want to get noticed, help the team win. Because when you win, you play in bigger games and more people watch. And that's where Pettersson's at. Is I think it's just a matter of exposure. You know, the West Coast time zone does him no favors. Let's face it, there is a bit of an East Coast bias that does exist. So, you know, the Canucks win more games. He plays in bigger games. More people watch them. They go, boy, I don't know if anyone has noticed this, but that Pettersson kid's pretty good. And all of a sudden they feel like geniuses.
How much of that factor that you talk about with playing in important games has played into the Calder Trophy discussion, do you think, this year? Because, you know, you've done a great job in the past breaking down Quinn Hughes' game. But at the same time, Cale Makar came in during the playoffs last year and, you know, made a statement right away scoring in a big game for the Avalanche. And it does feel like the national conversation is trending in the direction of Cale Makar as the Calder Trophy winner.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's just that it kind of felt like coming into the year, he would be viewed as the incumbent, right? Like you would have to have a not just as good a season as Cale Makar, you would have to have a better season than him because his name was on the tip of everyone's tongue. And, you know, whether that's fair or not, and let's face it, it's not fair, but whether, you know, that's the reality of how people went into this season is he had such a head start. So when he put together a good year on top of having that head start, it's probably what has him just a notch ahead of Quinn Hughes. You know, to put Hughes ahead of him, it's almost like you would need something to say, yeah, but this is why Hughes ahead of Makar. And it's tough to find those things when, again, it seemed like Makar was the guy going into the season.
I made this point in like January that I knew this was going to go on for 6 months of call or the call to conversation with Makar and Hughes. And at some point I just got fatigued by it. I was like, look, they're both phenomenal. I don't really care who wins the Calder. But the conversation that kind of interested me was how close are these guys to garnering Norris votes and where do they stand for you of like, mm-hmm. clearly Carlson or Yost are going to win, but just are they going to get fifth? Are they going to be on the ballot? How far away for that are they for you?
Well, first, I'm excited to say that neither Carlson nor Yossi got my vote. I'm excited about that, having picked someone different. But I agree that Carlson or Yossi is going to win it. So what I think is going to happen here in the coming years is there's going to be a reckoning of sorts of what is the Norris Trophy. You know, as the definition is, you know, best demonstrates an all-around ability. And, you know, so often the offense gets put at the forefront, as it should. It's hard to create offense. It's an extremely valuable thing, and it's very measurable. I think there's going to be enough of a ruckus that we start to really parse out this trophy differently. Maybe they do end up having a defensive defenseman award separated from an offensive one. But just with the way players play today in the NHL, you know, we had Jason York on Hockey Central today, and he was talking about Thomas Chabot. And I said, how far is this guy from, you know, the Norris echelon when it comes to defensemen? Thomas Chabot, I'll remind you, averaged 26 minutes per game in the NHL, which was first in the league ahead of Drew Doughty and all the other names you hear. And he wasn't falling all over himself to say this guy is going to be in the Norris conversation. Like, there are tons of mistakes and tons of things that went wrong, but he puts up points and he plays a lot of minutes because of the situation he's in. So for Hughes and Makar, I don't think it's going to be as simple as, hey, once one of them gets 70 points, they might win the Norris Trophy. I think we're going to vote on this trophy differently in the coming years, and it's going to be up to which one of them can round out their defensive game better. Hughes being the smaller guy, he still has a little bit of work on that side of the ice, you know, and that doesn't mean he's not going to get there, right? But I think he's at least a couple seasons still from being a guy who's talked to, you know, is that elite amongst the top guys.
Justin Bourne of Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, with us here on Sportsnet 650. And you did a great job, a great video that you guys put together. You can find it online on YouTube or at sportsnet.ca, breaking down some of the subtleties in Quinn Hughes' game. And people in Vancouver will be able to appreciate what Quinn Hughes has done throughout this season, because, of course, out here we watch him so closely. What are some of the things in Cale Makar's game that really stand out to you that may not be obvious to your average viewer, but that put him in an elite status for a defenseman in the league already?
I would say, you know, one thing Colby Armstrong has used to describe him is he says he's like Nathan MacKinnon from the back end. And with that, he means the power. Like, he's a bit of a horse. Like, you know, he can really get going and drag guys with him and, you know, get that puck off the wall to the middle of the ice. He's just sort of able to dictate the play as such a powerful skater. And, you know, it's not common to see that in young players. Generally, we see sort of that power and strength come on as guys mature and get older. But on top of the offensive ability and the great skating, he's a powerful guy. And, you know, he could take a little bit more contact, I think, than people think. You know, you're more than you would think an offensive defenseman to be able to handle.
We're doing this thing, Justin, during this topic because, you know, got to fill the airwaves. We're getting old players on, and we're talking about, like, okay, the style they were, kind of player prototypes. These two young D-men, when you look at prototypes for what the future of the defense is going to be, I know you're talking about as far as how we vote on the award, but just where the position is going, is this the most exciting position to you now of we're finally unlocking, like, what a true defenseman can be?
Yeah, no, it is exciting. And I think, you know, there's a lot of learning to be done here because, you know, Jeff Merrick on Hockey Central will say, well, you know, where are we going? Is it going to be positionless hockey? And I don't think it's going to be that. But we are changing how we view defensemen. And it's not new now that defensemen are, you know, looked at as sort of the fourth player in the rush. You know, you expect them to activate after making a breakout pass. And, you know, you want to see more all-round ability, not just defensive ability from defensemen. So I think we're still going to shape this, though, because I think there's a rush for people to get ahead of this and be like, you know, everyone, all these defensemen, you got to be able to skate, got to be able to pass, got to be able to skate. And, you know, there's so much emphasis on offensibility and stick handling. And, God, is it nice when a guy can just play D. So I do think that while we are placing more emphasis on offense and the position is being viewed as more offensively, we're going to be finding a happy medium here where not everyone has to be this guy. You know, not everyone has to be the guy who can, you know, skate and shoot and score. You know, Jake Muzzin here in Toronto is like worship because he's a guy who just plays defense. Like, thank you to, you know, for just being a guy who does that. So the evolution of the game is pointing in the direction of offense, but I don't think that precludes it from still being a defensive position at the end of the day.
Well, and that ties into a very interesting conversation that we've been having here in Vancouver, which is around Chris Tanev, who's an unrestricted free agent, 30 years old, certainly has had a lot of injuries, and, you know, whether the Canucks should re-sign him and what dollar amount they should commit to him and what term, because he is the kind of player that you would think would supplement a defenseman like Quinn Hughes, who can be freed up for offense. But that said, Hughes's defensive game has been very impressive too. And in fact, he wasn't necessarily reliant on playing with Tanev for large stretches of this season. If you look at a defenseman like Quinn Hughes and you look at a team like the Canucks who are trying to build, their defense has certainly improved, although it's, you know, still the weakest part of their team for my money. What are the kinds of players you want to be supporting a guy like Quinn Hughes with, and what should your vision be in terms of building out the rest of that blue line for the long term?
Yeah, that's a question that's tough to answer. You know, I'm not opposed, and this is something, you know, being here in Toronto that we saw them try Tyson Barry and Morgan Riley together. I don't necessarily think that offensive defenseman has to be anchored to a guy who is going to try to stay in his own end and play defense only. So I do think you have to sense out who a guy plays well with and how they operate together. I don't know that there's one necessarily, you know, prototype guy that you want your offensive players playing with. But a guy like Tanev certainly allows his partner to take more chances. And if you feel like you have an offensive player who's best when they take chances, boy, is that a nice fit. You know, the problem with a guy like Tanev is, you know, in terms of the NHL learning about where our guys are going, we're becoming more ageist. You know, like, we are seeing that learning curves, boy, are they not generous after 30 years old, particularly to injury prone guys. And those are the contracts that the NHL teams are trying to not get burned by anymore, is paying for guys for what they've done, not what they're going to do. So the Tanev one is a tough situation, tough to predict what you're going to get from him, if he's going to be able to perform at that same level. But for the Canucks, I think that having guys like him certainly would allow a guy like Quinn Hughes to be his best.
I just want to cycle back to something, Justin. You're talking about the power Cale Makar kind of generates in his own skating. And that's not necessarily Quinn Hughes' games, but you've done a great job highlighting his ability of his agility, mm-hmm. and that's what he's relying on.
Yeah, he's a liar. And I mean that in the nicest sense. Like, he is giving out bad information at all times. You know, his hips will be facing your direction. He's not skating. His hands are pointing somewhere and he's going somewhere else. You know, he is so, he kind of reminds me of Mitch Marner in that the top of his body and the bottom of his body really feel like two entirely separate entities that don't have to be traveling in the same direction. And so he's really tough to read. You know, he's able to sell other things and just hold guys in the wrong place for periods of time. So he's so nimble and so deceptive that when he lies just a little bit with a fake or a hips or whatever, he's able to get and create that separation and find that open ice where you're able to do something dangerous with the puck. So he is so dynamic that way. And that to me is not a skill you lose. I could see a 30-year-old Quinn Hughes still frustrating guys with his his hips don't lie, or his hips do lie, unlike Shakira. So he's going to be good at that for a long time.
He is Justin Bourne. You can follow him on Twitter at JT Bourne. Justin, thanks a lot, and be safe, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Justin.
It's the co-host of Hockey Central at Fan 590, and writes a lot of stuff for Sportsnet as well. That's great. And, hips don't lie.
Yeah, certainly. And I recommend that if you're listening right now and you haven't seen the great breakdown video that Justin did on Quinn Hughes and some of those subtleties in his game that he's alluding to there, go and find it. It's on the Sportsnet YouTube. I would imagine it's on sportsnet.ca as well. I just pulled it up right now by Googling Justin Bourne, Quinn Hughes, and he goes into, you know, the way he is able to lie with his body positioning. And something that really stood out to me in that video that, you know, you would think would be really obvious just watching him all the time, but I hadn't really taken note of it until Justin pointed it out, was how much Hughes creates time and space for himself when he's manning the top of the point by moving his feet outside the blue line while having his, you know, the puck on his stick still inside the blue line. So he's still onside, but he's maximizing all of that usable space to the top of the point and giving himself time to distribute the puck in a variety of different directions. While you might think that an offensive defenseman like Hughes would want to be creeping down into the high slot to generate chances, he's actually able to generate more for his teammates by sucking the forward that is trying to steal the puck from him as high up the zone as he can before distributing the puck off to one of his teammates.
And just think of that vacuum of space that gets created for someone off of the walls to come into. And you know, the power play had its highs and it had some lows, but you know, we talk so much of what the focal point of this power play is going to be. And it seems like you got these two dynamic traits, one Elias Pettersson's shot and two Quinn Hughes's mobility. The vision and the anticipation to create is going to continue, but what you're talking about there, that all stems from his confidence in his feet and just an awareness of how he can manipulate penalty killers by his own mobility.
Well, and I cannot remember seeing a young defenseman as confident with the puck when he is the last man back as Hughes is, where, you know, he's walking the top of the blue line. He's got a man on him under pressure and he looks as cool as a cucumber. And, you know, we've all seen this from watching him this season. But, you know, it just underscores how impressive he has been already and how much room he has to grow. And that's the exciting part for me, specifically when it comes to the power play. Like, you know, you alluded to it there. This power play had some ups and had some downs this year. But at the end of the day, it was still a top five power play in the league. And as these guys get older and more experienced, they're only going to become more consistent. So, you know, in my mind, we are seeing the early makings of what could be one of the very best. I mean, it is already one of the very best, but it has a chance to consistently be one of the top one or two power plays in the entire league for a stretch of time. And Canuck fans should be really excited about that because that'll make a big difference for this team over the next 5 to 10 years.
We'll get to a couple of more thoughts on Pettersson's snub off of the top 16 list. Some people kind of agree. We'll read those comments and get to Game of Takes coming up on the other side here on Social Distance Central on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Looking nice outside in Vancouver, and people are using that joy to be a bit angry at this NHL.com list that is Social Distance Central. Vic Nizar, Brendan Batchelor on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, we don't have line combinations to be angry at right now, so you got to channel that energy somewhere else.
Oh, that's fair, that's fair. Yeah, your Twitter must be kind of boring right now.
It has been, to be honest, and not, well, I mean, my Twitter's not boring. Please follow me.
Sorry, your Twitter is not boring. Your mentions must be kind of boring.
Yeah, because I, you know, that's kind of a hallmark of what I do during the season is I send the lines out every day for the morning skate, and then people get very angry because Louis Erickson's usually somewhere on them where people don't want him to be. So my mentions have been quieter Let's put it that way. There's a lot less unbridled rage in my mentions than there normally is.
Usually what's making the mentions pop off right now is Game of Takes. We'll get to that in about 10 minutes. We'll hear from Bailey Broadbent, a current champion sitting atop the composite throne. And taking him on today is Jordan from Saskatoon, frequent messenger in our 650-650 text message inbox. So that's coming up in a bit. I did want to read a couple of your replies to the to the article today of Elias Pettersson outside of that Super 16 players getting ready for the playoffs, the top 16 centers from NHL.com. This one's from Ryder. You can't put Pettersson in the convo of top centers when Miller takes all of his draws. I find faceoffs a bit overrated, but that's a fair point if you're making one of these lists.
I honestly don't think they're overrated because puck possession is so key in the modern game, and that's an area the Canucks need to be better at, is possessing the puck and keeping possession of the puck. And, you know, JT Miller has been a great addition for this group in the faceoff circle. He's just shy of 60% on the draws. He took the second most faceoffs of any player on the team this year. And Pettersson is sixth on that list. He didn't even take 200 faceoffs in 68 games. So that is an area, if you know, certainly he will be a very effective player if he never finds massive success in the faceoff circle. But if he wants to be considered an elite centerman, that's an area of his game he is going to have to improve, because he's not going to have a JT Miller on his wing to take those draws for him his entire career. And certainly there are plenty of areas that Pettersson will be able to improve and grow as his career goes forward. But if I was him, I would be bugging Manny Malhotra almost every single day at practice to help me work on my draws, because that's something that he is going to need going forward.
I've got a sinking suspicion that that's exactly what's going to happen.
It's likely already happening.
Yeah. For someone that we can see adapts his game and continues to evolve, I'm not too concerned of it. But in the moment, Ryder makes a good point that he's not taking draws right now. So let's not get ahead of ourselves when it comes to those top centers. I still think his overall contribution of, you're not getting puck possession immediately if he's not taking draws. But his presence and his impact on the overall game defensively is pretty spectacular, and he's getting better at it. And, you know, for me, he's pretty close to that conversation. For me, comfortably within that conversation of top 16 centers, somewhere around that 12-13 stage. But I understand where people come from. It's a good point from Ryder, specifically talking about the faceoffs themselves. We should get to a couple more things. We've talked about this story all week long with the Buffalo Sabres, and it keeps evolving. We were talking to Patrick Johnson last night. He made a good point. It's like, okay, yes, they're a bad organization, but okay, like, they have an opportunity here because they cleaned house with 22 people. If we're talking about how front offices should be built for the future, they have a rare opportunity to actually kind of try to build that out themselves.
Yeah, certainly. And you know, you look at Buffalo at how they've essentially burned everything to the ground. There is going to be an opportunity for them to build it out how they want. The interesting thing is that this may be a precursor for a trend that we'll see around the league during this COVID era, where, certainly NHL owners are very, very rich in most cases, in all cases, really. And so them losing money in their business isn't going to impact them to the same degree that, you know, someone that you know that owns a restaurant is being impacted in terms of percentages and in terms of being able to live and feed their family and things like that. But, you know, there are NHL owners, and we see it with the Pegulas, who are going to want to manage their businesses more efficiently. You know, that was one of the big terms that we heard coming out of that press conference with the Sabres, was efficient, efficient, efficient. And I just worry for a lot of people around the league right now that, in an era where, you know, you're not going to be selling tickets, you're not going to be bringing in that revenue, that what the Buffalo Sabres have done, which I think it came finished at, 22 people that they let go
from
their their front office or their hockey operations departments. I just worry that we could see other teams around the league trying to get a little bit leaner in that regard too, to meet the challenge of no ticket sales for the time being.
And one of the challenges is, we all know this, but it's always nice to hear it reinforced, is generally speaking, like your boss says jump, you're going to jump. And ultimately, it is the people that make the decisions that, you know, whether successful or not, that pay the price for it. And it was just interesting to hear this from Brendan Morrison today when he joined the Scott Rintoul show. That perhaps there was some changing of messaging that forced some decisions on behalf of Jason Botterill. This is BMO earlier today on the Scott Rintoul show.
You know, I don't know exactly what happened in Buffalo. I do think that there's a lot of question marks there. Obviously, when people look at what transpired, they look at the O'Reilly deal and him going to the Blues and then winning the Cup and the Conn Smythe. So, you know, all this stuff just piles on. But, you know, I don't know if he really wanted to make that deal. And it was a bit of an issue of maybe shedding some salary. And I think there might have been a discussion at the time that, hey, listen, you know, if we move Riley, we're not going to be as good a team right now. Like, this will make us worse. And I believe there was some support to build and with young players and move forward that way. So, okay, that's kind of the agenda. Well, fast forward to the draft 10 months later, and you know, they're looking at selecting certain players and, you know, maybe told they couldn't because now they have to win right away. So maybe some mixed messages along the way, which you know, you kind of have a vision set one way and all of a sudden you do a 180 a year later. So pretty tough to get any stability there, I think.
And that kind of goes with what Elliot Friedman was talking about the other day too, of, you know, there was a demand from above with what the expectations were with Jason Botterill, and perhaps he said no, and then you see where we are today. And it's so tough to build the foundation of an organization when you're constantly changing your directives.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what this comes down to. And that's why we talk about the Buffalo situation in the manner that we do, where, you know, Brian Burke called it a clown show this week. And, you know, they've really become one of those laughingstock teams around the league for how long they've been bad. And, you know, to a lesser degree, we've seen that with the Canucks, where, you know, for the first few years of Jim Benning's tenure, there was sort of a tug of war between wanting to rebuild and bring in young players, but also try to supplement that current core to allow them to continue to make the playoffs. And where the Canucks really turned a corner in terms of trying to fix things anyway is when they did finally commit to, no, this has to be a rebuild, and these are the things we're going to have to do. And, you know, for that, they've got Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes as two of their core pieces. Now, does that mean the work is done? Absolutely not. This is not a team that's a Stanley Cup contender yet. But, you know, you hear about that in Buffalo, where you make a trade of, you know, one of the best centermen out there in the game, right? In Ryan O'Reilly, who, of course, has gone on to win a Stanley Cup with the St. Louis Blues and has been an incredible fit with that organization. You move a guy like that out because you want to build for the future, and then your mandate changes. I can imagine that there would have been an immense sense of frustration from a guy like Jason Botterill. And then on top of all that, if your ownership comes to you and tells you that you've got to lay off and restructure most of your hockey operations department, you know, I can absolutely understand why Jason Botterill would have not wanted to do that. And it's not a great situation in Buffalo right now. That said, Kevin Adams is a guy that has worked with the Pegulas for a long time. They didn't even see fit to have a GM search because they seemed to trust him. Now, you know, we probably said that in the past about guys that they've brought in, and it hasn't worked out, as we've seen with the amount of turnover in that organization. But if you're a Sabres fan, that's what you have to cling on to, is that you've got to hope now that the Pegulas are going to let Adams do his job and try and get this team out of the gutter. But at the same time, you know, when you're gutting your hockey operations department, and you're an organization right now that around the league, I can't imagine many players would be excited at the prospect of going there. And, you know, you look no further than a guy like Patrick Berglund, who was right there and really didn't like the fit there. And, you know, there we saw the great piece on Hockey Night in Canada with Chris Johnston earlier this year, where there was a communication breakdown where he was supposed to have a limited no trade in his contract, but the list of teams wasn't submitted in time, and that's how that trade was able to happen. But nonetheless, you know, I would not want to go anywhere near Buffalo right now if I was an NHL player. So they're, you know, they've got a real uphill battle with, you know, trying to sign free agents. That's going to be a hard sell. Trying to keep Jack Eichel could be a hard sell at this point. And with how they've gutted their hockey operations department, you know, it's going to be a tough job for Kevin Adams here. And it's hard to be optimistic that he'll be able to turn things around.
650, we're going to need your thoughts coming up because it is time once again for Game of Takes. Oh, we had an injury. There we go.
When you play the Game of Takes,
winter is coming.
You either win.
A lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of a sheep.
Or, well, you know.
Dracarys.
Rally the realm and make your claim to the composite throne. Here's Bick.
I drink, and I know things.
And Batch.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Valar Morghulis.
Valar Dohaeris.
It's never going to get old. You know how this goes. We took your submissions all week long. Will Brock Besser ever lead the Vancouver Canucks in goals again? Did in his rookie year. We want to know if he'll do it again now that there's, oh, a lot more competition on the team. Bailey Broadbent sits atop the composite throne, so he waits patiently while he gets to listen, and we all get to listen, to the competitor, Jordan from Saskatoon. We ask him, will Brock Besser ever lead the Vancouver Canucks in goals again?
Okay, let's hold up here. Are we really questioning if Besser will ever lead this team in goals, Ken? Come on. Besser will most definitely lead this team in goals. He has shown consistently that he can score with whomever he's put within the lineup. There's lots of talk about power play deployment, but I don't think that's really the meat of Brock's game. If you look at his career stats, most of his goals aren't scored on the power play. And in fact, in his 3 years playing with the Canucks, only 21 of his 71 goals are power play goals. And if power play goals are something we want to see more of from Brock, then deployment to the second power play unit would give him a lot more opportunity to be a shooter, not play against the opposing team's best penalty killers, and be the number one guy on that unit. But the best way to get him goals, and to get him to lead this team in goals, is to give him line mates that complement his skill set. His shooting percentage has dropped since the 2017-18 season, which tells me that he's trying to do more. And this could be him trying to develop into a better all-around player, either with or away from the puck. He has shown that he has all the tools to be a great goal scorer in this league. We just got to get Brock to shoot more. Get him back to what's given him success in the past, and he will definitely find the success with putting the puck in the net. He's only 23. 23! And he hasn't even started to come into his prime. There's so much potential there. And he's only still developing his game. Obviously, his health and playing a full season will be a factor, and ultimately come contract time, we'll see what his true value is to this team. But first line or second line, I don't think it matters. The guy's a shooter and a goal scorer, and he's found success at every level he's played.
Will the throne go across the provincial border to Saskatoon, or will it remain inside British Columbia with the champion? Sitting atop of the composite throne, will Brock Besser ever lead the Canucks in goals? Bailey, we ask you.
Whether it's his ability to score and make plays offensively, play a full 200-foot game, or simply be a role model both on and off the ice, Brock Besser is as much of a core piece today for the Canucks as he was yesterday. But with that said, I believe it's unlikely he will ever lead the team in goal scoring again. And that's completely okay. First off, the Canucks have far more offensive weapons compared to Besser's rookie season. He's no longer competing with an aging Thomas Vanek and Daniel Sedin for the scoring lead. whether it's a top 15 NHL player in Elias Pettersson, Bo Horvat in his prime, or an emerging JT Miller among others, Besser's chances of leading the team in the category are much slimmer than they were 3 years ago. Amongst the team's top six forwards this season, Besser was sixth in goals per game. Secondly, like it or not, he does have an injury history. Besser's now played three full seasons in the NHL, all of which have been plagued by various injuries. A back injury in year one, a groin injury in year two, and a rib injury in year three has cut every season short as he's failed to play more than 69 games in a season. In order for Besser to lead the team in goals, he'll have to overcome any injuries. Finally, Besser's name has been rumored in the trade mill. Last year, his name was linked to Jason Zucker, which the Canucks reportedly turned down. And while I believe it's in the Canucks' best interest to hold on to Besser for the long haul, his considerable trade value combined with a bleak defense and cap outlook does make you question whether Besser will even have a chance to vie for the scoring lead over the long term. Ultimately, I would love to be proven wrong and see Besser thrive in a goal-scoring role, but it's also not the end of the world if I'm not. His game has evolved from a pure sniper to a much more well-rounded offensive player. I'm just not willing to count on him ever leading the Canucks in goal scoring again.
There's your champion. There's your leader at top of the composite throne. What do you think? 650, 650. You got to judge the takes. Jump online as well at Sportsnet 650. The poll question is going to be up in just moments. Plus, if you want to re-listen to those takes, you can. Share them with your friends. Try to rally the realm, and we'll see who sits atop the composite throne. We'll have more time than we did previously because, again, no Social Distance Central tomorrow. We'll be back on the program, Batch and I, from 4 to 7 tomorrow. But, Batch, it's pretty tight, man. I think this is going to be our closest one yet.
Yeah, and great arguments from both guys and good points brought up by both. At the same time, I think we could probably poke some holes through some of the things said by both of our debaters this week. So it's going to be interesting. It really comes down to what you feel about Brock Besser. And certainly we always encourage you to come into this with an open mind when you listen, and then make your decision.
It's about the takes. It's about the takes.
Based off the takes, exactly. Regardless of whatever preconceived opinions you may have. And I said I was going to come in with an open mind this week. I'm leaning towards Bailey this week.
Three-time champion.
Yeah, I know. That's just where my vote, where I have cast my vote on the poll. You know, the injury history is concerning for Besser. The goals per game stat he brings up is a strong point as well. Besser's had some lengthy droughts in his career, which is not necessarily something you can say about a guy like Pettersson, who has been consistent in his offensive production. And the one part where Jordan really lost me in his argument was where he talked about it being a better opportunity for Besser on the second power play. And in terms of, you know, the level of competition you're going to face for the opposing penalty kill and being more of a focal point of that power play, that's certainly true. But you're getting a fraction of the time on the ice of the top power play unit. Like, you know, we've seen this season, especially when the top power play unit was going, the second unit was lucky to get out there for the last 30 seconds of the man advantage. So that's just simple math that, you know, if you were on the power play for 90 seconds before and you're on it for 30 seconds now, you're not going to have as much time to produce offense. Now, I don't think it's a write-off that Besser will remain off that top power play unit. Certainly, if they don't choose to extend Tyler Toffoli, then that spot becomes his again. And you know what? It even could be that way heading into the playoffs this year. But to me, in order for Brock Besser to lead the team in goals, he still has to be a fixture on that top power play unit.
Your votes welcome. The early support looks like it's coming in from Jordan on the text line. You got a vote at Sportsnet 650 as well. So chime in. Who are you going to vote for? Bailey Broadbent or Jordan from Saskatoon? Jump online and cast your votes. That is it for us. We will peace out here. Make way for Dan Riccio and Randy Janda. Dave Anderchuk slated to join Reach Deep as they continue their Stanley Cup Convo Series. That's coming up in just moments on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.